Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
If you're not following Matt Prehm of 24/7 Sports on Twitter, you're missing out. You need to, and you need to be reading him, because last weekend I thought he had a great piece on the injuries that Oregon has endured this season. For people who are paying attention, we all know they're banged up, but how banged up are they? Well, Matt Prehm told us. I brought him on the show here in front of tomorrow's game in Vegas, Utah and Oregon. Matt's joining us. All right, what gave you the idea to kind of recap all the injuries?
I just felt like it was a case where I don't know how many teams could withstand the injuries that Oregon has had and have the year that they did. John Wilner of the Mercury News tweeted at me how many starters were out, and that kind of led me down the rabbit hole of really just running through the two deep. And it's remarkable of the number of guys that have missed time, the lineups that they've had to use. 43 different players have started a football game this season. 21 on offense, 22 on defense. That's just ridiculous. And they've gone without Kayvon Thibodeau for 4 or 5 games. They've lost C.J. Verdell. I think going into the year, you said C.J. Verdell is their best offensive player, and we all know Kayvon Thibodeau is their best defensive player. And yet they still won 10 games. They're the highest rated team in the college football playoff from the Pac-12. They still have the league's best win, which is the Ohio State game. They met expectations for this season. And I don't know how many other teams in this conference could handle the injuries that they have sustained and still had the year that they've had.
And I look at it too, and you know, Mario Cristobal will not get coach of the year votes. It's going to be Kyle Whittingham or maybe Jonathan Smith if Oregon blows out Utah. But I think this is maybe a better job than he did even last year amid a pandemic and 2 years ago. Last year was so weird.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that was my whole like thesis of my story was, Cristobal should win Coach of the Year, but he won't. And you're right. I said it would be Whittingham, Smith, or Dickert, but Dickert probably hasn't coached enough games at Washington State. But you're right. This is his best job at Oregon. And I think it should also kind of calm any of the thought processes of those in the Oregon fan base that he's just a recruiter and not a really good game coach, because they've won games and they've adjusted on the fly with an ever-changing lineup.
When this game gets kicked off tomorrow, it'll be 13 days since Oregon got beat 38-7.
Yeah,
it was a knockout, and that game was over at halftime. What has changed, or what gives you confidence that Oregon can stay in this game and make this one different?
Well, I think that was, Verone McKinley told me this week, that was the worst game he has been a part of in his time at Oregon. I think it's the worst game for any Oregon team since Washington beat them 70-21 or whatever it was in 2016. I think it was that bad of a performance. I don't think Oregon will play that bad again. That's the first part. I also think Utah played out of their minds. They played a perfect game of football. And it just happens to be against an opponent that played probably its worst in 4 games. And that sounds like I'm discrediting Utah, because I'm not. They are what USC should be in the Pac-12 South, the most consistent team, the team that gets more out of its players than their ranking was coming in. They play a physical brand of football. They're really good on defense. They run the football, and they will punish you if you make any kind of mistake. That is the team that everyone expects USC to be, but it's Utah. They are the best team that develops players over the last 4 or 5 years. Whittingham is by far one of the best coaches in the country. So I want to make that clear. I'm not trying to discredit Utah, but I think they played as optimal of a game as they possibly could have. That's that first time around, and it coincides with Oregon playing the worst possible game that they probably could have played. So I think both teams, you know, Oregon elevating its play back to its normal standard, Utah probably coming down a little bit of a notch, is going to make this game a lot closer than I think it some people probably are expecting it to be.
October of 2016, you were there, I was there. Washington put 70 on Oregon to snap that 12-game losing streak. This one reminded me of that. It was like everything lined up. It was an ambush. The fans there at Rice-Eccles Stadium were, you know, they were expecting it, anticipating it. I kind of felt like Oregon played the patsy that night. Anthony Brown was not good. He was erratic. Yeah. What do you see in Anthony Brown? You know, we were talking about this earlier this week. Like, you know, statistically, he's the second highest rated passer in the conference. He's like, you know, the 11th highest rusher in the conference, 9 rushing touchdowns. You can make a case he's Oregon's MVP, but everybody looks at him and goes, gosh, he's so erratic. He's inconsistent. What did you see when he plays poorly versus what he plays well? What's the difference for Anthony Brown?
When they get behind the sticks, when they get off schedule on first down, it's so imperative, whether it's throwing the football on first down or them running the football on first down. If they face a second and long, or if they get a penalty on first down that makes a 5-yard run drop back to a first and 15 because of a holding penalty, which happened in that game, that's when Anthony Brown, I feel like when it's consistently that type of a game, that's where Anthony Brown's he's not going to have the type of performance that we saw against Oregon State the week after that Utah game, when Oregon against Oregon State ran the ball really effectively and they were able to establish the run game, which then opened up the passing game and then finishing drives. So I think the difference in this one, Anthony Brown's probably going to be one of the wild card, one of the difference makers in this game Friday night. Is can he play a B-plus game? Can he play an A-minus game? Because if he does, I really like Oregon's chances. If he doesn't and he plays another clunker of a game, they're going to have a hard time to win this game, because that game at Utah, it got away from them too quickly. The Utah lead exploded too fast to the point where they had to, and that's just not who this Oregon team is when they're having to air it out every single time. And I think we also get lost in translation here a little bit, is Oregon that week found out Jai Johnson was out for the year with an injury, and then in practice they find Jalen Redd also goes down with an injury, out for the year. And then Micah Pittman that week also chooses to leave the program, playing a position that both Redd and Johnny Johnson play. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, the receiver crew just got decimated. Two guys out for the year, the two most experienced guys on the team, the two primary starters at the position. And then a guy that's been in the program for 3 years and has double-digit starts to his name transfers. And you're left with Devin Williams, Chris Hudson, and a bunch of true freshmen going into the Viper pit of Rice-Eccles Stadium.
Mario Cristobal is not a guy who's putting the ball up, 40 times a game. And, you know, quarterbacks and receivers are not falling over themselves to come to Oregon right now. Are you at all concerned? And is there anything Mario Cristobal can do, like, to kind of shift that narrative a little bit in the short term?
I think the way Devin Williams has played the second half of this season is a very good step in the right direction. I think Chris Hudson in the last 2 weeks has equaled all the production he has given Oregon leading up to the Utah game. And so I think I would point to, hey, they're seeing some progress. They're seeing some development there. They are recruiting at a high level. Troy Franklin and Dante Thornton and Isaiah Brevard, all four-star recruits. Franklin and Thornton were top 50 guys in the country, regardless of position, when they showed up here this year as true freshmen. McMillan is a top 30 recruit in the country this season, and he's coming to Oregon next year. So I do think recruits are interested in this program. Big play receivers are interested in this team. But you've got to just have production. I think that's the easiest way to do it. And if Devin Williams and Chris Hudson can put up good numbers against Utah and then put up good numbers again in the bowl game that they're playing in, whatever that is, the Rose Bowl or the Alamo Bowl, that will stem any kind of immediate question marks you have. And the next season, you need to have those guys sustain the success. And probably one of the three freshmen on the team this year, and then McMillan that's coming in next year, one of those four guys has to also have a solid season as a true freshman next year.
I'm going to have you make your pick in this game, but I want to ask you about Lincoln Riley to USC, Kalen DeBoer to Washington. I'm going to interrupt the parade for USC right now. Sure. I don't want to hand them the South Division right now. Like we did that already. Chip Kelly to UCLA, Herm Edwards to Arizona State. You got your finger on the pulse of recruiting. How concerned is Oregon right now, or should they be, about Lincoln Riley at USC?
Well, first, Utah is the school that those teams need to compete against first. And I think they're going to have a hard time because Utah is a very physical football team. Lincoln Riley, I think, is one of the best coaches in college football. He certainly already started to make recruiting waves, landing a verbal commitment from a 2023 five-star guy. He's probably going to flip his other five stars from Cali with that win to Oklahoma. Oregon, I don't know if concerned is the right word. Oregon's probably going to be aware of his presence, but they're not going to be concerned about it because Lincoln Riley didn't build Oklahoma into what Oklahoma is. He was the offensive coordinator. And very much like Chip Kelly and Mike Bellotti, Bob Stoops stepped away so that Lincoln Riley wouldn't leave the Sooner program. He inherited a really good position and was charged with maintaining that. He has not built a program on his own. And it's going to be really interesting to see how he does at USC in that manner. They're a mess. They do not have good offensive linemen. They do not have good defensive linemen. They do not have good linebackers. And Lincoln Riley's success has come against defenses in the Big 12, which is the league's probably the worst conference in defense, top to bottom. And I'm not trying to say the Pac-12 is this juggernaut like the SEC reputation is, but he's going to see better defenses in the Pac-12 than he is than he did in the Big 12. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. He needs to be able to recruit offensively along the offensive line and win the trenches. And right now, Oregon is a monster in that position, and it's going to take a lot of momentum to unseat them as the top dog. Now, receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, those guys are going to be very interested in Oklahoma and USC, excuse me, but they already were. And so I don't know if that really changes anything.
I also think, look at Kalen DeBoer at Washington, he's just sneaky good. I think Jen Cohen, the AD there, got that right. You saw on Tuesday night, you've got the quarterback from Fresno State who jumps into the portal, and all of a sudden it's like, I kind of think like Jake Haener back at Washington, DeBoer, offensively they're going to be good. Yep. I kind of wanted to celebrate Washington's hire a little bit more because, the AD at USC just obnoxious saying, we've changed the landscape. Finally, maybe Mario Cristobal gets a break in that he's not the most obnoxious coach in the conference. Like, everybody now looks at USC and goes, okay, USC's back to being USC.
Yeah, I think Washington's hire is that one where it's probably – he probably was not their first choice. He probably wasn't their second choice, but that's okay if it's the right choice and the one that works out correctly. Not to tie it back to Oregon, but very similar to Dana Altman. And so I think they've made a very solid hire. Fresno State this past couple of seasons have been very, very good for a Mountain West Conference team, for a Group of Five team. And the Haener storyline is going to be interesting to see if he comes back to UW or not. Just I mean, that would be a story. He leaves UW because they don't appreciate him, and he comes back and is now kind of their savior to kind of bridge that gap between him and Heward.
We're talking to Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports. All right, tomorrow, Kyle Whittingham in Utah, Oregon, Mario Cristobal. They'll kick it off, Allegiant Stadium there in Vegas. How do you see the game? I picked Oregon 28-27, but I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, I don't. I have, for some reason, developed a reputation in Salt Lake City as being a major homer for the Oregon. And I will wear that badge, I guess, this week because I am going to pick Oregon. I am not as confident like I was the first time around, because you do have to acknowledge that 38-7 happened and Oregon got embarrassed. And that's their words. That's not mine. But I just think things are going to even out. The water is going to go from choppy to calm. And when the averages meet each other on the field and you play in a perfect weather condition, that's underrated here. You know, the Salt Lake game was cold, high elevation. We're going to play in this game. We're going to be playing in Vegas indoors, no wind, no heat, no cold, perfect 72-degree football. You know, I just think Oregon's probably going to have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder in this one. They said as much. So I think Oregon will play better football, and they'll win this one. I was thinking probably a 30-27 type of an outcome. But like you, I'm reserving the right that I'm not fully confident in that pick.
I'm not betting on this game. I'm just betting my reputation on this game. Kayvon Thibodeau, and Oregon has showed up. You're right. Oregon has shown up in big games. That's another thing that makes me feel a little bit more lean towards Oregon. Kayvon Thibodeau, can I ask you this? If it's not a Rose Bowl, let's just say Utah beats them. Let's say Utah wins this game. Oregon goes to the Alamo. Kayvon Thibodeau playing in that Alamo?
I want to say yes. I will say yes. If it was something other than that, but it's below that, probably no, and he shouldn't play. I think he's one of the rare guys where he's a superstar player and he's all about the team.
Yeah.
And I think that's not very common these days. My gut says he plays in the Alamo Bowl if they go to the Alamo Bowl. If it's the Rose Bowl, he's without a doubt playing. And I mean, maybe if there's some chaos around college football and Oregon plays close and loses, maybe they sneak into the Fiesta Bowl. Maybe that's a possibility. Probably not, but I'm not quite sure I'm going to knock them out of the New Year just yet, just because the Oregon brand name is pretty big.
Now, you going to Vegas? Am I going to see you tomorrow at the stadium?
I am. It'll be my second time in a week that I've been in Vegas, so we'll see how much I sit at the craps table the second time around.
Yeah, there you go. Yo, 11. Matt Preem, I appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
Yep.
Matt Preem, 24/7 Sports. Follow him on Twitter. You heard it. He's picking it 30-27. I've got Oregon 28, Utah 27. I think we're all in the same neighborhood, but, you know, it's hard because you have the recency bias of seeing Utah do 38-7 to Oregon. And I don't blame Bill Riley, who came on earlier in the show and he says, hey, I saw it and, you know, I don't see an outcome that's 38 points different. Here's the difference in this game for me as I tried to handicap it. I almost had to throw out the game at Utah. And I know I don't normally do that, but I almost had to throw it out because I felt like it was just one of those days where it just lined up. It was a knockout in the first round. Like, you see boxers will do that. Let's see what happens in the rematch. Can Oregon punch a little bit? Can they get ahead in the game and not make Anthony Brown one-dimensional pocket passer? That's not his game. Keep an eye on that tomorrow at Allegiant Stadium. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. All right, let's turn the focus to the Pac-12 championship game tomorrow. Man, it just crept up on us. Judah Newby, you have kind of tiptoed around your pick for the week. I went big on Monday. I said 28-27, Oregon over Utah. I don't feel great about it, but I'm sticking with my pick. How do you see this game? And we just heard from Matt Prehm of 24/7 Sports, you know, and we heard from Bill Riley of, you know, the voice of Salt Lake City and Utah sports. So we have the yin and the yang there. What makes you think Oregon can win this game? Or do you think Oregon wins this game?
I'm going to go with Utah. And part of it's a reverse jinx. But look, you know, I want to take Oregon so bad, John. I really do. I want to take Oregon very, very bad. I want to say, look, it's hard to beat the same team twice in a year, especially within a three-week span. I want to believe in Oregon's ability to be physical up front. I want to believe that they can adjust from the loss, you know, in Salt Lake 2 weeks ago and make all the right moves. But at the end of the day, they're still really banged up. And to not have Jalen Redd and Johnny Johnson, they're not stars, but they matter. And when this offense is humming, those guys are getting looks and catching the ball. I know Chris Hudson got a lot of looks in the Oregon State game and played really well. And, you know, Brown and Devin Williams are starting to connect a little bit more too. But you're still banged up front. And I think Utah is nasty. And I'm believing in their, you know, this is their season. The narrative for them a little bit and believing that this is Kyle Whittingham's time to take him to the Rose Bowl. So I am going with the Utes in a close game. I'm going 23-20.
Ooh, we're all in the 20s. I think we're all seeing the game kind of at the same pace. I don't think it's going to be a blowout either way. I can construct a case for Oregon, and I believe that Oregon will come into this game and act a little differently. I kind of felt like that meeting 13 days ago was more about it being Utah's day, right? And all the pieces falling into place. If you're building a case for Oregon to win this game, what does the first half of this game look like, Judah?
You score first, and you get a takeaway on defense. You know, I don't feel like there's been enough of those. I'm looking at Thibodeau. We said it before the year, but Kayvon, he really has had a really good season. He's been very disruptive at times. But when you're a potential, you know, top three pick, maybe number one overall pick.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.